which is covered up here. Good morning. Chris Cole, this introduction is for you. Graphics interchange formats. Isn't that exciting? Not really, huh? All right. Back in 1987, there was a guy, he was a developer named Steve Wilhite. He was working for CompuServe. And he came up with this great idea for... You have youth worship? Okay. If you guys want to head out with Angie for youth worship, 3 years old, third grade, head on out. You guys are going to miss out on the graphics interchange format, but I guess there's still time to learn. Chris, you'll want to hear this. So, as I was saying, Marshall, this is exciting for you. I didn't see you up here. I know you're engaged now. Just feel the enthusiasm, overwhelmed. So as I was saying, still Steve Wilhite, he was the one that created this graphics interchange format. Kind of like a moving picture in a lot of ways. It was a great idea, especially as the internet was really kind of first beginning to take form, because it was moving picture, so it kind of gave you a lot of what video gave you, but he didn't have all the baggage of the size of the files, and you know, when the internet was so much slower and all those kinds of things. But it's kind of interesting because it's making a comeback, and now these are seen all over the place. Now maybe you have no idea what I'm talking about. We're going to try to use this clicker and see if it works. Oh, there it is. Now you know what it is, right? You know these beautiful, lovely forms. Regarding the graphic interchange format, maybe the biggest debate is how you pronounce the abbreviation. You may not know it in the long form, but all of you probably are familiar with GIF. Now, some of you know what these are, some of you probably have never heard of them. I'm curious, do you consider it a GIF or is it a GIF? If it's a GIF, raise your hand. The GIFs, I like kind of lean to GIF. How many of you pronounce it GIF? All right, well, for whatever it's worth, when they developed this at CompuServe, this is going to be a long day if I can't get this to work. Click over here. There we go. Soft G, hard G. Choosy developers choose GIF. So when they developed it, this was a little saying that went around CompuServe. And apparently Steve Wilhite was receiving an award or something. He was so irritated that people pronounced it GIF that he made this big public statement about it. But the problem was, it was out of the box now, and I think a lot of people, obviously a lot of people here, choose the hard G saying rather than soft G. This has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about today. Well, sort of. But I'm going to try to do something different. I'm going to try to preach using GIFs. We'll see what happens. We're going to start in the beginning, in a place where, why does this not want to cooperate? In the beginning, there we go. It's going to completely change your mind now, because you're going to see moving pictures, and it's going to be so life-changing. We're going to start the sermon where so many of my sermons begin. If you don't know Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 very well yet, shame on you. You haven't been paying attention. So many of our messages begin here because it's really the entryway into almost every topic in the Bible. In the beginning, it seems impossible to imagine that our familiarity with this story hasn't watered down the message. Even when I say the words, in the beginning, our mind automatically is going to that first verse of the Bible. Yeah, God created the heavens and the earth. We know that part. But it's like, wait, do you know what you just said? Like, you said this mind-blowing, incredibly reality-shifting statement that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's an incredible and impressive statement. And I love the fact that Genesis 1 opens with this beautiful picture. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God was already there. We're not told where he came from or his existence. But he's always been there in the beginning. And he's responsible for the heavens and the earth. Genesis says to look around. God created this world that we are living in. What's interesting about it is that we're not given a scientific blow-by-blow account of how exactly he created it, even though maybe we would like that. We're not given the idea that God was like this mad scientist putting together the creation. We're not told that he rolled out the periodic table and then created from that all the things that you see. Instead, he was like an artist. You knew Bob Ross was going to show up today, didn't you? Genesis is really more of an artistic account than a scientific account. And so many of these scientific discussions we get into, they miss the point. The point is not the scientist. The point is the artist. God speaking light into existence when there was none. Sorry, that was dramatic. And the light and darkness he calls day and light night. And then he begins to separate waters from waters and height from depth. He begins to pull the sky apart somehow. This is the most annoying thing. This is one of the things we're going to be fixing, by the way, because just flip it. No, it's not working. All that for this stupid slide. That's why I was going to do it. Do the next one. Now this one's kind of cool. This is the artist description of how God is pulling water into water to make dry ground. Then he begins to fill it once we have vegetation. Trees and shrubs. Plants and flowers. They have their own seed and they can fill the land. And again, you're like, yeah, I learned this song when I was 6 years old about God made this on day one. But to really appreciate all that God has done. And then he starts making animals. Filling the seas, filling the air. Animals that crawl along the ground, monkeys going down slides. And then the story kind of slows down around verse 26. And what happens on day 6 is incredible, impressive. God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. Let him rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over the earth, and over all the creation that moves along the God. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them. And when you see the creation account told that way, and you really realize just how different the creation of mankind was in our image, in our likeness. We got into some heavy theology last week in our youth group class. Tyus, the astute one, says, I don't know, it probably wasn't him, but I'm just building him up. Why is there a plural pronoun there? Let us make man in our image. It's one of the mysteries of the Genesis account. Like, there's this kind of Trinitarian perspective there. Something about the way that God was, he instilled in his creations, especially in man. And I love this next, the way that the easy-to-read translation translates it. Go ahead and flip it. It's not working. Let's make humans who will be like us. Like, isn't that a great way to picture it? Like, there's this one part of creation that's different from everything else, because that part of creation is going to be like God in some way. Like there's something imminent inside of us, each of us individually, that's like God. It's like God. Humans are like God's statues. A lot of people believe that's really what the writer intended of Genesis, is that, you know, a great king would set up statues all around his kingdom so everybody knew who's in charge and who rules. But instead of, you know, these marble statues, he puts people in place. That we become God's representatives living in his creation, kind of taking over for him. This is God's place, and we're given authority and power to be like him over his creation. As we've heard this morning, our topic, our word is humanity. And maybe that seems a little odd or peculiar. Maybe it stands out a little bit from some of the other words that we've done, but I think the Bible has a lot to say about our humanity. Our culture has a lot to say about our humanity, and we're not surprised to know that those messages are a little bit different. To pursue the topic of humanity is to delve a little bit deeper. I was thinking about, we just talked about work a couple weeks ago, right? That was our word of the week, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I thought to myself, we should have saved that word for Labor Day weekend, right? That would have been the perfect word to talk about today. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, no, humanity is actually a better word for this weekend, because a lot of people have difficulty separating their identity from their work. And so when we talk about humanity, we're getting to a deeper question. We're getting to a deeper meaning of reality. Go to the next slide. Like, why are we even here? That's really what the question of humanity is. What are we supposed to be doing? What is our nature? What are we here for? Why? I'm sure many, many of us have asked that question. What am I here for? Why am I here? It's one of the fundamental questions we ask of our lives. And some of us say, well, I'm here to work. It's how we feel it. We have difficulty seeing any purpose besides our vocation. Our vocation becomes our identity. There's a lot of ways that people answer that question, why are you here? Go through a couple of them quickly, because I think there will be some truth in it. Next slide, please. I love the one in the top corner. It's so funny. One of the ways that people answer the question, why am I here? Well, I'm here to party. Like, I'm here to have a good time. I'm here to do whatever feels good and feels right. YOLO, you only live once. It's one of the most prevalent answers to the question of why you're here in our culture. And it's always been around. In Acts chapter 17, Paul, you may remember, was in the Areopagus discussing with a lot of philosophers in the day. One of the groups of philosophers that Acts says was present was the Epicureans. Now, the Epicureans were in the school of Epicurus. He was a Greek philosopher. And his belief was that the highest goal or principle of life was pleasure. Do whatever feels good. Do whatever feels right. It sounds like he might have been born in the suburbs and raised. That's the life of suburbia. We do whatever feels good, and so we distract ourselves because Kurt reminded us of all the stuff that's happening in the world. And so rather than do that, I'd watch a football game instead. Or maybe I'll buy something new or go shopping at the mall or whatever it is. We distract ourselves from the realities of the world because that's really what we're here for, is for pleasure. So we find that pleasure in a lot of different ways. Sexual addiction, drug addiction, gambling addiction, sports addiction, it all makes us feel better, and so we supplant our purpose of humanity, which we're going to try to pursue, and say, well, no, our purpose is to just feel good. Then there's kind of the other extreme. Go to the next one. You have these people who feel like they were created for kind of a higher plane. This has roots all the way back to Plato, who Plato believed that there was kind of a spiritual realm that was kind of higher than the physical realm. And the true experience of humanity was to try to push through the physicality into this extreme spiritual realm of some kind. It kind of manifests its way in New Age understandings, New Age religion. There was another group of philosophers who were there with Paul in the Areopagus named the Stoics. And the Stoics had kind of that same idea that if we just think, it has a very high view of human of the human capacity. In a lot of ways, it's related to humanism today. As we just try really hard, we can elevate ourselves. We don't need anything from the outside, but just from the inside. And so you see this kind of obsession in that way, that maybe that's the purpose of humanity, to pursue a higher plane. The Gnostics would come along later on after Jesus' life and kind of develop a philosophy that was kind of related to that. You see it all over the place. For the next slide, there's also, I just want to watch this because it's hilarious. Boom. I don't even know why this is here. It has nothing to do with this scene. That got moved along the way. For a lot of people, family is the end goal, which is kind of an interesting, kind of related but different than the other topics. All our life ambitions and aspirations are tied up in our family life. Now, there's the obvious reality, and that is if the family is depleted, and we see this all over our country, communities are destroyed, the stability of our society is at risk, and all those kinds of things. But there's another end to the pendulum that I think we're sometimes at risk of, and that is some people live out their lives based on the successes and failures of their children. Too many people in our society view the unmarried or childless as somehow second-tier citizens, and it's a shame, because the Bible is very specific in acknowledging that your role is not tied up in how well you can procreate. It's not tied up in what kind of family dynamic that you may have, as important as they are. Too many people settle for that, and I think you see that especially in the suburbs, that our reality, our truth is going to be experienced in our family. And so we live vicariously through our children and see them succeed, and that somehow fulfills our end goal in humanity. And the Bible teaches a different message. You know, for other people, it's safety. Living in a powerful country with a powerful military, knowing that we'll be safe, knowing we won't be invaded, knowing our way of life is secure. For other people, it's education, to learn more, to get more degrees, to write more books, to take more classes. For others, it's, and you can just kind of fill in the blank. We're all seeking our purposes in so many different ways. And the question before us this morning is, what is our purpose here? Why are we here? We chose one of these 52, one of these, humanity as one of these 52 words. And so the question kind of gets to us, well, what is the purpose of humanity? Why would we see that as one of the most important words for us? We're going to find the answer, I think, at least somewhat, in the way that Jesus most often refers to himself. Although that I really knew this, but when you think about Jesus, you think of all the titles he has, Messiah and Lord and Jesus of Nazareth, and all the titles that we're familiar with, Son of God. But interestingly, it is the title Son of Man that he chose to refer to himself most often. 83 different times he calls himself the Son of Man. Only 3 other people call him the Son of Man, and it happens only in 3 occasions. 2 of them are in Revelation. One of the reasons we don't often think of Jesus as Son of Man is, I think, because it's a little confusing and we're not exactly sure what he was talking about anyways. It's interesting that nobody ever said, hey, Jesus, what are you talking about when you refer to yourself as the Son of Man? We don't have time to do a full study of it, but we're going to go to one place that is hopefully helpful in this. Go to the next slide. Maybe one or two. We'll see where we're at. Next one. Yes, believe in your dreams. The book of Daniel is confusing and odd and strange. We don't have time to do a whole detailed study of it, but I want to read to you from Daniel chapter 7 in a vision. Earlier, this is chapter 7, verse 1. Earlier, during the first year of Belshazzar's reign in Babylon, Daniel had a dream and saw visions as he lay in his bed. He wrote down the dream, and this is what he saw. In my vision that night, I, Daniel, saw a great storm churning the surface of a great sea with strong winds blowing in every direction. Then four huge beasts came up out of the water, each different from the other. This is really weird stuff, right? The first beast was like a lion with eagle's wings. As I watched, its wings were pulled off, and it was left standing with its two hind feet on the ground like a human being. It was given a human mind. Then I saw a second beast, and it looked like a bear. It was rearing up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth and its teeth, and I heard a voice saying, "Get up, devour the flesh of many people." Then the third of these strange beasts appeared, and it looked like a leopard, and it had four birds' wings on its backs with four heads. Great authority was given to this beast. I really wish Bob Ross would have painted some of these pictures. Then in my vision that night, I saw a fourth beast, terrifying, dreadful, and even strong. It devoured and crushed its victims with huge iron teeth and trampled their remains beneath its feet. It was different from any other beast. It had 10 horns. As I was looking at the horns, suddenly another small horn appeared among them. Three of the first horns were torn out by the roots to make room for it. This little horn had eyes like human eyes and a mouth that was boasting arrogantly. I watched as thrones were put in place, and the ancient one sat down to judge. His clothing was like white snow, and his hair was like pure wool. He sat on a fiery throne with wheels of blazing fire, and a river of fire was pouring out, flowing from his presence. Millions of angels ministered to him. Many millions stood to attend him. Then the court began its session, and the books were opened. I continued to watch because I could hear the little horn's boastful speech. I kept watching until the fourth beast was killed and its body was destroyed by fire. The other three beasts had their authority taken from them, but they were allowed to live a while longer. As my vision continued that night, I saw someone like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the ancient one and was led into his presence. He was given great authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world so that the people of every race and nation and language would obey him. His rule is eternal and will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed. And we don't have time to go through that dream because it's super strange and super odd. But I wanted to read through this vision because it's very similar to the vision that's captured in Revelation chapter 4 and chapter 5. You have the one on the throne, the one who's kind of sovereign over everybody. And then you have this one, and Daniel makes mention that he looks like Son of Man. And again, what exactly does that even mean? And a lot of people aren't for sure about it. But when he mentions that his rule is eternal, it will never end, his kingdom will never be destroyed, we know that language. That sounds a whole lot like the Jesus that we're familiar with. It sounds a whole lot like actually what happens in Revelation 4, which is the one on the throne, and in chapter 5 is the lamb that's been slain. Clearly, this is Jesus. It's interesting, Kurt, that you chose to read from John 1. It's hard to talk about humanity without going to John 1. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God. The Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through Him. Nothing was created except through Him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and His life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. So the Word became human and made His home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. And we have seen His glory, the glory of the Father, and only Son. We don't often think about it this way, but Jesus came to show us what it means to be human. Like we don't think about that very often, but Jesus came to show us what it means to be human. He came to answer that question of why we're here. He came to show us how to do it. While it may seem odd to think about our humanity is nothing without the image of God that's been impressed upon us, for which we were created, and Jesus showed us how to live. And I think there's two things that have implications for this regard. I think, first of all, our calling is a very high one. We can settle for those other things that we talked about. Some of them are noble, even. But it's not the ultimate purpose that we have been called to do. God has called us to be His representatives on this world. When you walk out the door in the morning, you're going as a representative of God. an extension of His kingdom. You are His ambassador in all walks of life. And so the way that you interact with people, the way that you fulfill your business, the way you go about your business, the way you are a mom or a dad, the way you are a worker, a co-worker, the way you are a citizen, all those things, they have to do with, am I representing God the way that I am intended to be? We talked a lot this morning about how fallen our creation is, how fallen our humanity is. We look at it all over the place. We see it all the time. And God says, I want my people to be different. I want my people to do something different. And so this morning, the calling on your heart is, are you living your life different? The other side of the coin is the fact that you have been called. It is not an easy calling. You will sin. You will fall short. We all do. We struggle. We bump over ourselves walking through this life. And the passage of Scripture that Mary Beth read to us this morning shows us that the importance that Jesus was fully man was that we have a high priest who can empathize. You pray to this God, you pray to this deity that you're trying to learn, you're trying to figure out, you're trying to get to know better. He's someone who understands your life. He's somebody who's been through the things that you've been through. He's somebody who knows what He's talking about and what's happening to us. One of the early discussions of doctrine in the history of the church was whether Jesus was fully God or fully man, and eventually, obviously, they determined that He was somehow mysteriously both. And it's one of those kind of big, heady doctrines that we don't talk often about, but there is a lot of significance to the fact that Jesus was both fully God, full of power, like Kurt did such a great job of earlier talking about. He had all that stuff before Him. And yet, as Philippians said, He emptied Himself of that, became man, fully understand what's going on. It's really one of the things that separates our faith in Christianity as different than a lot of other faiths, because we celebrate and worship a God who empathizes, who's one of us, who's a brother. It's a powerful faith that we have and called to do. It sustains us through the difficult times and the difficult things that befall us as humans. This morning we close and hopefully seek out a vision to be more human this week, to not fall for all the cheap improvisations that our culture offers us, but to be rooted in Scripture and rooted in our faith in God, to say, I want to live my life this week knowing that what the things that I do are glorifying God and making Him more holy in my worship. I would invite you to stand with us, and we'll sing this final song as we prepare to head out.